one who's guilty. Come on, let's kick the ballistics here. Ain't no Uzis made in Harlem. I mean, not one of us in here owns a poppy feet.
There are obviously tens of thousands of innocent people currently languishing in prison in the United States. And so the Innocence Project is in a race against time.
They say criminals should be locked in prison, but they living in a big house that's white. It's not right. We gotta fight. They don't lock up corporate criminals. They ruin the planet. Jails filled with nonviolent offenders, and it's tragic.
Mistreated, got heated how they treated like animals. Corporations invading countries like cannibals for capital. The actual conditions in prison ain't meant for living. It's like torture. They give it with knife fights and lists.
Where's the rehabilitation or correction or direction? It's corruption. They got gangs. They can stop the way it's running. Inmates coming out worse. They immersed in dysfunction. Prison abolition is written on by Angela Davis.
Gotta stop the profit in prison, get driven and change this. Yeah. Societal conditions cause inequality and robbery. Technology is something that's not distributed props to America. One can afford the right lawyer's price. The other goes to jail for like 25 to life. Not given rehabilitation and incarceration.
The United States is the only democracy on this planet that executes its prisoners.
There is still the idea that if you've been arrested, you did something.
It's no escape. It's all about profit. No stopping rape in this place. They give no contraception for protection. So you know AIDS is spreading, infected with no discretion. They never gave reparations for slavery and bad habits.
It's packed with mostly blacks and Hispanics. It's riddled with a lot who got time that's innocent. I start to explain with the hurricane's pain. It's a shame. It's so much racism in the system.
Daryl Hunt was innocent but served 20 years in prison. His innocence was presented with DNA evidence. Similar things often happen. It happened to Charles Chapman. It happened to Alden Logan. There's so many we don't know
in Philly. We've been calling for them to let Mamiya go. And Mandela the 27 in a place that's like the opposite of heaven. Rockefeller drug laws is used as a weapon in deception of detention.
How come these men are free?
Free.
Because DNA testing proved that they didn't do it. They didn't do it.
They didn't do it.
They didn't do it.
Discrimination in the past readily is left present. Evidently, you can see they should end the death penalty. Yes. They ready with the facts on what happened to Aaron Patterson.
Yes.
This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour, brought to you on WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. We are the wake-up call. We're going to get you awake.
Get ourselves awake.
Yeah, me first. And we're happy to be on the air. This is our first show after the new year.
That's right.
Yep.
Our 2015.
First broadcast for 2015.
2015, yes. Not 1915.
Right. And so
1915 is when Wilt started, actually.
Right. That's when Women's International League was first founded.
First started by Jane Addams.
By Jane Addams and a bunch of other people who, women, all women, who were trying to stop World War I, otherwise known as the Great War, from happening. Didn't work, as we obviously found out. But we're going to be celebrating our 100th anniversary for the national and international, and the 80th anniversary for our local chapter.
Our local, mm-hmm.
So,
which is fair. It's quite impressive.
Right.
We're impressed, and we hope you're impressed.
Right. So today we're not talking about peace directly. We're talking about a place that promotes peace, justice.
Peace and justice.
Peace and we're very happy to have Katie here from Internationalist Bookstore and Community
Center.
Community Center, okay.
We have the longest name. It's very hard.
you fit right in with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
It's true.
Yeah.
They're all important words. They all have to go in there.
Right, they need to be in there, absolutely. And Katie, I take it you have a last name, or are you just like a celebrity Katie?
Oh, I wish. I wish I was that cool. No, my last name is Yao. My name is Katie Yao.
Okay.
I'm one of the co-managers at Internationalist Books and Community Center.
Well, we're so delighted that Katie could come today.
At the last minute.
At the last minute. We had a cancellation. and I'm just trying to tell my phone to be quiet. And what's really nice about it, and we'll be talking about that with Katie, is the Internationalist has had a big move this year. For any of you who haven't been paying much attention, for many, many, many years they've been uptown on West Franklin Street, and they moved to the better part of this area, to Carrboro, and directly, diagonally across the street from this radio station on Lloyd Street. And so Katie was able to just walk over here.
Yeah, it was great.
Which is pretty nice. Katie, I wonder, because some, you know, I was really surprised to hear at one point that the population in Chapel Hill, 50% of it turns over every year. I think that's an exaggeration, but it's still, there's a, because so much of our population are student-oriented and people with jobs with the university and things like that, I think there's a lot of truth in it, even though I think it's exaggerated. And so because of that, my feeling is that maybe some of our listeners really don't know a lot about the Internationalist, and I wondered if you could give us a brief, a little bit of a history, how long you've been here, a little bit of what you're about, so because this would be a great way for anybody who doesn't know to realize how, what a important institution the Internationalist Bookstore is to this community.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's always interesting to find out what people know or don't know about Internationalist books. And I grew up here, and so I grew up around Internationalist. And so that's one of the things that's fun for me about being a co-manager now, is that when I was a teenager, I was growing up in the store and volunteering when it was on Franklin. So
you're one of those rare breeds that you're native.
It's sort of, in a manner of speaking. And so I think what's always been really cool to me about the Internationalist is that at any given time, it's really made up of folks who have a long history in this area or a long history with the project itself, and then folks who are brand new to it and discovering it all the time. And so we always have kind of that balance of a sense of the history and legacy and new ideas and an influx of new energy all the time. But Internationalist Books was started by Bob Sheldon in 1981. And Internationalist Books was originally in, it was in a room on Henderson Street, which is that little street that connects Rosemary and the far end of Franklin over like where campus begins. It was there for about a year, and that was where he started it. And then it moved to Rosemary. And a lot of folks who've been around the area for longer remember the Rosemary store.
Rosemary Street.
So
right.
It's been really great with the move. I think a lot of people have kind of come out of the woodwork who do know the history. And so I've had so many people in the store now in Carrboro who never even made it to the Franklin Street one. And we were on Franklin Street for 18 years. So there are older folks coming in who are reminiscing with me about Rosemary, and I was never there. So it was on Rosemary Street for a really long time, and a lot of folks who are from the area know, but a lot of people who are new to the bookstore or new to the area don't know the really sad story of Bob Sheldon's death. And he was murdered in the store in 1991.
It was 91.
And the murder was never solved. His friends and community believed it was politically motivated. He was very outspoken. Mm-hmm. Bob's a fascinating and wonderful person that a lot of folks in the community, there's still lots of folks in this community who knew him personally and worked with him in lots of different ways over many years. So there's a lot of living memory about him as well. But after his death, the community around the bookstore decided to reopen and continue this project that had been so important to him. And so it was reorganized as a volunteer-run collective with two paid co-managers. And then later it was made into a nonprofit. And so it's continued that way since 1991. So it has a really long and interesting life, but also a really long and interesting life as the kind of project it is now. So now we're in 2015.
Yes, we got to remember.
And it's an entirely volunteer-run project, and we are still a 501c3 nonprofit. We have a bunch of different projects that we collaborate with. We have some projects that we sponsor and assist, and this really big web of things, almost all of which are volunteer-run. And so it's both a bookstore and a community center, which is why we have this very long name.
No, that's so important. We always try to emphasize that in our show about it, that it is a community center.
Yeah, and that was a big motivation for us for the move, because the bookstore part is really important to all of us, and I think it's certainly was one of, you know, it was a really important part to Bob, and one of his key missions with Internationalist was having a source for hard-to-find and radical political material as a way of introducing these ideas into the community in which he was working. And we still, that's still very important to a lot of us. And then also a lot of us are just giant nerds. So it attracts a lot of very bookish people. But the primary thing that we do is provide a space for radical organizing, for the collection and dissemination of resources, whether they be educational, whether they be, you know, just collecting access to things that folks need in the community. And so that's pretty much our, like, focus. And then the bookstore is, you know, is kind of one piece of that and the thing that financially keeps it viable, sort of.
Sort of.
And so, yeah, it was a really big part of the motivation of the move was wanting to find a place that felt like it would give us some more room to grow with the programs that we have, with the groups that use the space, and a place that was more comfortable and more accessible so that more folks from different parts of the communities in this area would feel excited and comfortable using the space, because we felt like the place we had been in was just not big enough for our needs and not, you know, we had more desire and more demand for that kind of space. I think especially as Chapel Hill and Carrboro change and develop, the necessity for a place that you can go to and not have to spend money and that you can have a meeting and meet other people who are, you know, motivated about the things you're motivated about and people who are engaged politically. The demand was too big and we felt like we were kind of outgrowing that space.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
That you realize how you are needed in this community and that you did need to expand, which is wonderful. And I know for me that a lot of times the parking has gotten so brutal downtown.
Oh, Franklin Street is strange.
And so, so terrible, you know, and it was just those couple little parking spaces in front. On the other side of the street, there was always jammed. So sometimes I would try to go and I'd just give up, you know, it just... I guess I should have persisted, but it was just, you know,
so many people,
difficult.
When we told them we were moving, so many people, even friends of mine, you know, I've been living back in the area and co-managing Internationalist for about 2.5 years now. And even friends of mine who know, you know, that my life is the bookstore, it's this thing that's so important to me, are like, oh, yeah, I never really come by, but I will now that you're in Carrboro. And I'm like, it's a mile away from where we were. But it is a big shift, I think. And that was part of what we wanted. We wanted a place that felt easier to get to, that was still on the bus lines the way Franklin was, but just felt easier for people to find, less stressful to navigate, less, you know, sort of fraught. And Franklin was proving to be challenging in a lot of different ways. And the development on Franklin Street really looked to us kind of like there was sort of a writing on the wall of how long it would be viable for a project like ours to stay where we were. So we wanted... We wanted to make sure that we could find a place to keep what we were doing sustainable.
So you moved to the People's Republic.
I know. It is really amazing to me. And being from this area, I understand very deeply how different Chapel Hill and Carrboro are. And Carrboro is funny to me because when I was growing up here, Carrboro didn't look like this. So I'm like, okay, like Carrboro's changed a lot also. But it is... Crossing the line was a really big culture shift, and I think for some people who aren't from the area, I think they had a hard time understanding why some of the townies involved in the project were like, this feels so big, you know, because I was really emotional about leaving Franklin Street.
Were you?
Yeah, for a lot of reasons. I mean, I think...
Do you live up near there?
Oh, goodness, no. No, I live in Carrboro. but just because it's where it had been, and I think it meant a lot to a lot of us. For wherever the Internationalist is, part of it is making a good home for radical politics and organizing,
yeah.
and a place for people to build connections. But another part of it is, I think especially for, you know, the last 5 or 10 years of the project, it's been really important to us to be a visible presence pushing back on what the rest of the town is doing.
Yeah.
And so part of leaving Franklin felt hard because we didn't want to see it as retreating from that public visibility, but rather doing something that could keep the project stronger.
Okay.
But also, yeah, I grew up in this store, like, you know, and it was always so, so comforting in this one way to go to my shifts, you know, and just kind of be able to think about being 14 and finding that place and what it meant to me and being in the same room. So there was a lot of emotion, I think, and a lot too, just like other folks who are, you know, like other townies, like when I was telling people, they were just like, that feels like the end of an era. Like that part of town is changing so much. And I think that's true.
It is true.
And there's, you know, I think there's a lot of things to feel about the kind of change we've seen in downtown. But
yeah.
But we really wanted to make sure that we, I think for me, especially in the role that I'm in, I sort of see my job as like a steward, you know, because mm-hmm. internationalist books, you know, Bob's legacy is very, very important to us. But also there are all of these managers from the years from the 90s on and all of these volunteers and just generations of people in the Triangle who, you know, really made this place unique and powerful and long lasting. And I think about all of those people all the time when I'm doing what I'm doing. And so we felt like it was really important to make sure that we made the best decision for the store to keep it strong. And yeah. if that was leaving, then that's what it was. And we're thrilled with where we are now and really happy to be in Carrboro.
Oh, well, good. It was a hard decision.
It was a hard decision. Yeah. Also, it is hard to move a business. I don't know if anyone knew. It was also just logistically, you know, we kind of were like, can we do it? Yeah, we can do it.
Yeah.
So, and we did it.
Well, I mean, when I think how hard it is to move a home, even if it's a small or large one, a business is another whole kettle of fish. And that's, yeah, all this getting the word out to people. And the other thing is you have quite a roster of alumni.
Yeah. Yeah, for
sure. Which is interesting. I never thought about that because I bet some of them do stay in this area.
Yeah. And there's, you know, one of the things that I really liked about the move was that it gave a lot of people a reason to reach out and say, oh, I see some things changing. Like, oh, you know, and just we would get people who would kind of come around and just be sweet and helpful. And I'd be like, so what's, you know, hi, like, I'm this person. Like, what's your deal? And people would be like, oh, I like volunteered here for like 10 years, 20 years ago. You know, like, people have.
Yeah.
It really brought a lot of people back to the store. And and in the last year too, we did some projects that were really focused on our history as we thought about transition. Even before we knew we were going to move, we had been working on a project that I was really excited about. We've created an internationalist books archive at the Rubenstein Rare Book and Manuscript Library at Duke University, which is where Bob Sheldon's papers are held. So we worked with a librarian there who is also an iBooks alum. She was a volunteer and a board member, and her name's Kelly Wooten, and she works at Duke University Libraries now.
We worked with her.
Great.
Yeah. Wilf also has a special collection there.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Oh, I love archives.
And she, we worked with her, particularly on our around our 75th anniversary when we decided to put a history together.
Yeah, that's what
that's wonderful.
And,
which is about 5 years ago.
Yeah, five years ago.
Yeah, that's right. And we I think over the years we had taken things to Duke, but that really was an impetus to really pull a lot of things together, just like you all. And so I keep forgetting about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a really valuable thing to do. And it felt important to me to initiate that because we, you know, we're over 30 years old as a project. And so that mm-hmm. means that, you know, we're certainly in a position where most of the people who are working day to day on the project weren't around, you know, 30 mm-hmm. years ago. And it feels important to me for us to have a sense of history as a project. And we won't always have access to those relationships. You know, because people pass away, people move to other places, communities are different. The politics of the project have changed, and so some folks are in some different trajectories. So it felt like a really good place to start trying to pull all those different pieces together so that we wouldn't lose them and so that we would have a way to learn from this project and its history. I think there are very few bookstores at all that are as old in this area. You know, I remember growing up here and there being, you know, the Intimate and, you know, like all these different places, and all of them are gone, you know, except for Internationalist.
Right.
And it's really great to see new independent bookstores. And we're something obviously much, much different than a bookstore. But even that feels important. And then I think it's really, really crucial, you know, particularly in the South, for us to know and remember that there are these really strong ongoing radical histories. And I want to make sure that all these different generations of that at Internationalist, we don't lose them. And so it's a really cool project to work on. Kelly's
what
amazing
a huge
to work with.
Project.
Yeah. So we pulled together what we had in the store, and that was great, but was more recent history. And then Kelly and I have been sort of slowly reaching out to the general membership of Internationalist.
Oh.
And she and I have been sort of asking specific people if they'd consider donating their personal materials from their time in the store. And so I think that that's something that'll continue. So what we got done this past year was building kind of a base, you know, putting together an agreement, creating a collection, and starting to do outreach about it. So every once in a while, people will talk to me about it, and I'll kind of send them her way. And so I think we're building little by little. But we wanted a safe place for all those things to go.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting.
That is very exciting. So Kelly's been working with you, and so this is a project in process.
Yeah, the collection is open now.
Yeah, getting hold of these former alumnus.
Yeah, but reaching out to people for sure is an ongoing thing. And I hope that we'll continue adding to the collection. I mean, and also, you know, as we continue doing the work, I want to look at how we document that on a, you know, slight like archival librarian tangent. Political work in this era is so digital, you know, that it's hard to find out what we would have to archive. So a lot of the recent history of the store, it was a good wake-up call for me to be like, oh, like, what do we have to give these lessons on to other folks? Because we don't have a lot of paper materials or notes or things like that anymore because everything's on the internet. So that's interesting. But, of course, there's digital archiving, too. But so I think it's really cool. And it was a good opportunity to reflect on what Internationalist has been, what its core is, and then what it needs to adapt and to change as we want to continue the project in a way that is exciting and relevant, what we need to do to sort of grow it. I think the archive project really helped me at least kind of center in on, like, what is it that really makes us who we are, and then where do we want to go from there?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I've always seen the Internationalist as a community center as well. It always seemed to me a place that if you were new to this community, you could go and quickly find out a lot of what was happening, particularly in progressive if not radical, politics and happenings.
Yeah.
And it also seemed to be a place that a lot of young people go, which is very few places that are that welcoming for young people. And I've always just thought that it's really, really neat.
Yeah, we've had a huge resurgence of, like, teenaged folks in the store in the last couple
young
of years.
Okay.
Oh, goodness, yes. You know, because students have always been a big part of the world of Internationalist, especially when we were closer to campus. We'll see how that transitions. We still have UNC students who are really involved in a lot of different things, and we work with a lot of different UNC student groups as a resource, which is fun and which I enjoy a lot. But we've, for the last several years, we've had a really consistent body of teenage volunteers who self-organize meetings around things that are interesting to them, who are doing their own political self-education, who are finding support from the adults in the world of the bookstore, who are, you know, really integral to the running of the bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And that there, you know, there's been kind of ups and downs with that. But I think in the last several years, that's really been one of our biggest functions, is being this kind of safer space for teenage folks, especially teenage folks who have politics that are outside the norm, or, you know, LGBTQ kids, and, you know, just kids that are, like, really interested in creating their own spaces. Internationalist being an open door for them to do that is really, really important to me. So we've had a lot of that, and a lot of those folks are now in their 20s and are still volunteering. And, you know, we have somebody who started volunteering at 15 who's now on our board in his 20s, and that's really exciting for me. And we just had – we're having a new influx of teen participants. So there's a group of teens who have a self-organized radical teen group, the CHC Brigade, that meets the first Mondays of every month, that just started this year.
And what does that stand for, the CHC?
Oh, I don't know, but they have a zine that you can get in the store if you want to learn more about them. But they're awesome. So they're just getting off the ground. So
that is really interesting. I didn't realize that. And boy, that is so needed, a place for teens to go that they feel important and feel like they're doing something really useful.
Yeah.
Like that. That's terrific. So I guess it's by word of mouth. I guess you don't go to the high school and give talks or anything.
No, we do give talks at UNC. So we've always done kind of more formal outreach that way. Okay. But I think it is a lot of word of mouth. And I think, you know, it's a small town if you're from here.
Yeah.
It feels, you know, that thing you were saying earlier about the turnover, that's true at the university level. And so sometimes it feels like we live in a really big area. But I think having grown up here, I can relate really strongly to how small it feels when you're from here.
Yeah.
So kids find us and they use the store in the ways that they see fit. And I'm really happy that we have a space that supports that.
Yeah. Wow. This is so interesting. I think Dick is, we're getting ready for our station break.
Yeah, sure.
If
now's a good time, let's go ahead. This is the Wake Up Call, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show. From the Triangle Branch of Women's International League, celebrating our 100th anniversary nationally and internationally, and our 80th anniversary locally this year. So we encourage you all to find out what we're about. You can get some information about that from our website locally, which is triangle.wilpf.org, and there's a national website, which is WILF.
Just go to WILF.org,
and there's an international one, which I think is internationalwilf.org. But you can get linked to there from the national website anyway. And we encourage you to find out what we're doing. And we are being brought to you over the facilities of WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, LP being low power, which means we don't have a very big reach, and unless you stream us off the internet, which has worldwide capabilities. So please feel free to hop on the internet wherever you are if you just got to have your fix for WILF. And
if you're listening and getting frustrated with some static, switch over if you have a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it'll be very clear if you're on your computer.
Right.
Yeah.
It comes out very well. And, of course, we have for all our radio's shows existence been sponsored by the Internationalist Bookstore.
Yes.
We know where that. Yes, we know where it is. It's right
across the street.
It's right across the street on Lloyd Street in Carrboro, and moved from Franklin Street in Chapel Hill.
Just six months ago?
Oh gosh, not even. We opened the last weekend of September. So in the new space, so just a few months.
And the new space has a little bit better parking, particularly at night.
Yes.
I understand this.
It's not hard to have better parking than Franklin Street, but yes, we have substantially better parking.
Right.
Yeah, and you can walk over from many places in Carrboro, so it's not as critical
yeah.
as it felt, at least for some of us uptown.
Right. And we encourage you folks to stay tuned at 6 o'clock and listen to News and Views. Chris Fitzsimon of North Carolina Policy Watch will be on their weekly show from 6 to 6:30. We encourage you, as I said, to listen to that. We do that whenever we don't have distractions, and it's a very good show. And I want to read one thing, science in the news. Flu facts, what's the scoop on the vaccine this year and how the flu can affect you? This is on a show called Science in the News, the first Science in the News discussion on WCOM. Will be held January 15th, 2015, from 7 to 8 p.m. Oh, it says Room B, Chapel Hill Public Library. I don't know if it'll be on, it may not be on the air after all. Pardon me. But it considered a public service announcement anyway, finding out about the current situation on the flu vaccine that they didn't quite get right. But it still has advantages, and you really ought to go ahead and do that. You got something, Lori?
Yeah, I just wanted to call people's attention to today's Chapel Hill News. They have a very nice little report about what we went to on Saturday. The NAACP had a forum Saturday from 12 to, supposed to be to 3. I think it ended around 2. And they had invited Carrboro Police Chief Walter Horton, Chapel Hill Police Chief Chris Blue, and Orange County Sheriff Charles Blackwood. We didn't give them a chance to give a talk. We right away had them sit down, and we had a whole lot of questions that were really important to our membership and I think to members of the community. Let's see. The report here is quite good. Issues came up about racial profiling. A UNC study of traffic stops in North Carolina found black and Hispanic drivers were 77% and 96% more likely to be searched, respectively, than whites. I won't go into there. Was several issues that were of deep concern, and especially with the tragedies of Ferguson and New York City in the news. This seemed a very timely time to find out more right. about what's happening mm-hmm. locally, because this locality is not free from the same things that have been happening elsewhere. There's nationwide problems with the militarization of the police, nationwide problems with racial profiling, all the things that happened that we're hearing about on the news around the country can happen here and have happened here. So this was, I think the people who put on the forum and those of us who attended and the police chiefs themselves see this as a beginning conversation, that it was not the be-all and end-all. There's a whole lot of issues. But they did listen and were responsive. I think the headline was that that they may revise their search policy in line with what I guess the sheriff's already doing, that before you search somebody's car, when it's just a hunch or whatever, that you get them to sign that permission. So there's just a whole lot of procedural things that can make a huge difference, and a whole lot of maybe training that is needed for diversity training for a lot of police officers. And what we're trying to get towards, too, is a lot more accountability. So when things happen that the community is upset about, that there's an opportunity to feel that you can make input and get some real answers from the police department. So we have a lot. There is a police advisory board, but we don't have a civilian review board. So there's a whole lot of procedural and community input steps that we want to take a look at and see what we can do, because we want to have good community police relationships. And when you're in trouble, you want policemen to be there. We're not saying the police are the bad guys, but there's always a few in any organization who can create fear and tension in a community, and also just some procedural things that even the good police may be unaware of are upsetting people. So we're going to be working on that, and I just wanted to let people know about the forum, be paying attention that there'll be other follow-up things. And one other thing, this is something that we've had on our program before, over the years, two or three different times, about the whole issue of sludge. Sludge is one of those sort of unmentionable things, or unfortunately, it's not mentioned enough. And sludge is what comes, is the byproduct of treating human feces and other sewage waste, and treating them with some supposedly ways that make them more less dangerous and not having problems with microorganisms and bacteria. There's some question whether the process that's used is sufficient, because it's not just that. It's almost like the human feces is the least of the problems. There's also a lot of hospital waste. There's a lot of heavy metals from industry. There's a lot of things that, you know, people think of it, oh, well, manure, and it's been heated up. You know, there's a whole lot more involved, which I won't. We've already had programs. We'll be talking about it again. But the headline, again, in our wonderful local paper, at the bottom of page one, OWASA may stop spraying sludge on farms. And so there's been a lot of controversy, and they're considering ending a program that has been spraying sewage sludge on local farms since 1977. And a lot of people in these areas have been having respiratory skin problems, other more serious problems. So if you're interested in this, and you very well should be interested in this, if you could come to the OWASA community room tomorrow, Thursday, at 6 o'clock. The community room is at 400 Jones Street Road.
Jones Ferry Road.
Thank you, Jones Ferry Road. Thank you, Dick. And I'm supposedly reading it. Jones Ferry Road in Carrboro. You can see the big OWASA building there, and you go to the far left, and down sort of in the lower level is the community room. So please try to go if you can, because this is up for consideration and for community input.
So. Yeah, one of the things to remember is not only is there the hospital waste and human waste, but part of what amounts to human waste is all the chemicals that you use in your house. And those go into the same stream. And so, you know, all your Lysol that you use and all of your other household cleaners and whatever spoiled food you pitch down the drain, it's all eligible to be picked up and sprayed. So there's a lot of stuff out there that you need to be careful of.
Yeah, and they do a process that they feel, and maybe in the past it was sufficient, a heating up process that they feel has made it okay. There's now a question about that as more and more people are in the area, as more and more chemicals are part of our whole waste stream of all kinds.
Right.
And so there'll be there's people who've been working on this for several years. They've been on our show, Myra Dodson, and the what is their organization called? The Stop Sludge Group, or I can't remember exactly. But they will be there Thursday night, and I hope, if you're interested, and this affects all of us, if you can possibly come, or go tomorrow night to Owosso. But also keep checking your paper, and if you can't go, see what report, because the paper's pretty good about putting reports out about these big community meetings. So We just want to encourage you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, is that it?
Yeah, I think we should get back to our guest. This is Dick Paddock of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom,
and co-host. This is Lori Hoyt, co-host to Dick. And, I don't think we gave our names at the beginning.
No, we didn't.
We've been doing it so long, we feel that everybody knows us. But, we better get our name out there. If you have any question or complaint or pat on the back, we'd love to hear from you. And our guest today is Katie Yao. And I know Yao is a local name. Is farms out?
Wow, you are from here.
North Green, Greensboro Street, Greensboro Highway.
Yeah, sort of central and to the west a little bit. My dad's family is from Randolph County, but Chatham County before that. So, yeah. We're not anywhere else, though.
Carolinian.
Really, really North Carolinian.
Which is great that we have some natives, like you were talking about. This is new people coming in, but it's always nice to have some people who know the history, have been around, who know what it's been like here for many, many years. So we've been talking with Katie about the big move that occurred this year from the Internationalist Bookstore and Community Center. And they're right diagonally across the street from the radio station on Lloyd Street, right before the Glass Company or after the Glass Company?
We're right before the Glass Company.
That's what
I thought,
right?
Yeah, we share a building with the Merch, which is a really great business. These guys, Chip and Patrick, do screen printing and like custom design and T-shirts and posters. And so they have their big screen printing shop in their offices in most of the building, and then we sublease the storefront from them.
The storefront, right.
Yeah.
And right, there's a little building right on the very corner, a little...
There's like a hair salon right
it's
there.
It's now a hair salon. Yeah. It's had been an art... it's had different things. And right after that is the Internationalist, so it's right within sight of where we are. And Katie's been giving us a really... good history of the Internationalist Bookstore and where it's been and where it is, and some ideas about where it hopes to go. And I had not thought about the idea that you have a lot of alumnus of the people who've been volunteers over these years.
Yeah, it's hard to, you can't throw a stone and not hit someone who's been at iBooks and sometimes very surprising ways. It maintains its position, I think, as we are explicitly and unapologetically radical in our politics. And mm-hmm. It's interesting sometimes to be like, oh, that person used to volunteer here. Weird. Because I think people's politics change or develop. So it's really interesting to kind of think about what that means, that there is this, what it means about a community for people to have had these kinds of relationships to each other politically, and how cool it is to have this space stay open that people have been through at lots of different parts of their mm-hmm. lives or at really, different important political moments in the last 30 years that we've mm-hmm. been open.
Yeah.
So it's neat. It's really very much a gathering place in a lot of ways.
It is neat. It's one thing to be online, but it's another thing to have a physical space that if anybody new to town wants, especially a young person, but even an older person, want to know some things that are going on with radical politics, there's a space they can go to. You always have all kinds of posters about what's happening, and this is happening. You have I hope you still have your bumper stickers.
We do. We still have our bumper stickers. They're one of the things that sells the most, even over here. On Franklin, they used to get gone because people, you could see them from the window.
I promote them.
Yes.
On the show.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, I have to try to keep up with the bumper sticker orders. It's one of the harder parts of inventory.
The best bumper stickers in town.
They're, yes.
Yeah.
And we try to also, there's lots of really interesting material that gets produced, locally and across North Carolina and across the region about different political things. And so that's also a thing that I think is really good and unique about Internationalist is, you know, when people are writing zines or creating pamphlets in response to things that are happening here politically, they always come and drop them off at the store. So it's a really good conversation starter in a lot of ways, and a place where some of the, I think, really powerful elements of political organizing that are absent from the ways that people communicate online, the kind of hand-to-hand, you know, picking something up, like physically having it, being able to meet somebody else, you know, especially because of the sorts of politics that we have and folks in our collective have. I think it's really nice for people to have a place that they can approach and come to and learn about why people are saying the things they're saying or doing the things they're doing.
Yeah.
Or if people see that and have affinity with it, having a place to find other people and not feel so alone and build collective power that way. So it is really different to have a physical space than just kind of a clearinghouse of information on the internet.
Absolutely.
I think especially because so many of our politics are really rooted in the idea of relationship or of mutuality, it doesn't make sense to us to not have a place that people can interact with one another in person. So it's really important to keep that space viable and accessible. And that was, you know, what we were hoping the move would do.
Yeah.
And so far that seems to be good. We were talking about this before we came in the station, but we were concerned about whether people would come with us or find us or,
it's
also
a big thing.
It's a big move. I mean, it really doesn't seem like that big of a move, but it really is. And we're not necessarily on the same kind of thoroughfare, but it's been really great because we've had a lot of, like I was saying before, a lot of folks with history with the store kind of coming back to it after not visiting for a while or being in touch and, you know, kind of coming to us with programs they want to do or stuff that they're working on now that they want us to know about. And that's really, really exciting. And lots of new people are finding us who never knew we were here. Mm-hmm. Even though they've been here this whole time, they just never went to that part of Franklin and never found us. And now are just like, oh, what's new here? And so it's an interesting mix. So we're excited that people are coming with us. And we really love the new space, and it's already been, you know, what we wanted it to be in terms of a better space for the kinds of programs and meetings that we consider to be our primary objective. Like, we really see ourselves as a radical resource center first before everything else. So yeah, for our yearly, because in the early 2000s, we were turned into like a member co-op. And so people can have memberships at Internationalist and then they get a discount and some other things. And it's one of our, you know, sort of revenue streams that supports the store financially. So for this year's annual meeting, we've done it at Vimala's the last couple of years. Vimala's is amazing and we love them. And they're very, very supportive of the store. But this year we decided we're going to do an open house of the new space so that people kind of have a big open invitation to come see the new space if they haven't yet. So that'll be on January 22nd, so at the end of this month.
Oh, I'm so glad that we got you on the air in time to get that announced.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it'll be January 22nd, open house style from 5 to 9. And it'll be where we do our annual member meeting thing, but also just a time to gather ideas about what people want to see from the store as we're making this big transition. And it'll be fun, and we'll have food, and the board's putting it on, and it's open to members and non-members and friends of the store, old and new. So
the 22nd, 5 to 9?
Mm-hmm.
And what day of the week is that?
It's a Thursday.
It's a Thursday.
Yeah.
So we ought to make sure to announce it on the radio show too the night
before. Oh,
yeah, we got two more weeks.
Yeah, we're trying to. So if you want to help us spread the word, certainly please come and check out the new space.
Absolutely. And we'll have to go.
Yes.
That would be wonderful.
There's something on the 22nd, and I hope that it won't get in the way.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Probably. For a little town, we have a lot going on. That's what I've always said about this area.
Well, we're going to definitely try. Definitely try. And it's early enough even. And I, you know.
Yeah, it's a drop-in style thing. So maybe you want to just come by for a minute.
Oh, I think it's a great idea with the new space to have it be there. That's great.
Yeah, so we're really excited about getting to show it off a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. This is all good stuff.
Yeah, we think so. We hope.
This is all good stuff. Yeah. And we definitely, whatever else was on, we'll make this
priority, right?
Yeah, we'll arrange it one way or another.
One way or another, we're going to have to be there.
Yeah, and we'll try to get other people to announce it, too.
Thanks. Yeah. That'll be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so how long have you been the co-manager?
For 2.5 years.
Oh, you're very experienced.
Something like that.
Yeah.
There's a flashing light. I don't understand
yes,
how that works.
That would be telephone.
Oh, hey, telephone.
Oh, if you put the
hello. Hello,
Dick?
This is WCOM.
Dick, this is Ed.
Yeah, hi, Ed.
Have you already talked about Bob Sheldon? I came on a little bit late,
yes,
but
we have.
You already talked about Bob Sheldon.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, well, I knew Bob real well and had worked at the store myself and just thought that people, you know, shouldn't realize what an important hero Bob is to Chapel Hill. And his murder is still unsolved, and it's one of the big mysteries in the police department here. Probably a political a murder. So
yeah, most likely.
So anyway, I just wanted to call in and check and say, you're doing a great job in the internationalists. I was over there the other day and got my bumper stickers. And
oh, great.
I always keep the back of my car covered with bumper stickers from the internationalists. This is the best place in the town to find them. So.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yep.
So are you going to come on the 22nd? Did you hear that part?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get there.
Oh, great.
I'm also real active on the Sewage Sludge Action Network. Had a hard time, I think, coming up with the name of the organization that's
yes,
fighting
thank you.
The...
thank you for that. The
Sewage Sludge
Action Network. Thank you.
basically, Sewage sludge is the thing that the SSAN is trying to fight is the solid stuff that goes out on the field. Some of it goes out in tank trucks. That's true. Liquid and OWASA's seems like they're going to stop doing that, but we're still concerned about their alternative to. Sending that stuff to make compost with, because if you make compost with it, you're going to have the same toxic metals in it that you have now, and it's not going to be any safer, you know, to apply it as compost than as it is to spray it over the field. So we're concerned about that part of OWASA's new report, and it's be important to go down tomorrow night and talk about that.
So I take it that you're going tomorrow night.
Yeah, I'll be there.
That's great, Ed. That's great. Well, thank you so much for calling in putting out the right name, the Sewage Sludge Action Network. Don't ever let me forget that, Dick.
Nancy Holt was the other person's name that you were trying to come up with that had been on our program before.
Dotson and Holt, right.
And right. I did remember Myra Dotson. I just forgot Nancy's name, yeah.
Nancy is the scientist. She's the expert on the chemical end of this thing. And Myra's also a nurse and knows a lot about science. But Nancy's really, we all kind of look to her.
She's the scientist.
As the expert, right.
Okay, Ed, well, I hope I see you soon.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, that was sweet.
Yeah, yeah. He's the one that, he's a WILF member,
mm-hmm.
and he does a lot of getting the guests arranged for the show, so I used to have to do it all for several years, and then last year we had a retreat, and I said, I'm burning out. So
he volunteered.
He volunteered.
Oh, wonderful.
And so he does most of it, although Dick and I pitch in at times, too, so, yeah. Yeah, so where are we at? How are we on time?
We've got about 6 minutes left.
6 minutes left. Okay, so is there anything else? I mean, the big thing we want to
put on our memory board.
January 22nd.
Is about the 22nd and promoting that, and along with our regular promotion of how wonderful the Internationalist is.
Oh,
is there any last...
We're also coming up on the time of year, you know, as Ed mentioned, you know, I had talked a lot about Bob earlier in the show, but we do every year commemorate. I can't remember what year the town did this, but the town declared the anniversary of his death Bob Sheldon Day some years ago. And so for many years, the bookstore has been celebrating Bob Sheldon Day on February 21st. And we celebrate every year by giving out the Bob Sheldon Award. So we decide to honor an activist group or campaign in the community that we feel has, you know, really, really matches up with our values or has done really important work that, you know, that we think is something in sort of the legacy or the spirit of the work or the values that Bob had. So that'll be at the end of February. So not that far out. The last 2 years, we've done a thing called the Internationalist Books Cabaret. So it's like a talent show, kind of big, fun show and party at the Nightlight over in Chapel Hill and Rosemary. As a big yearly fundraiser, and we time it to correspond with the anniversary of Bob's death. And so we've been giving out the Bob Sheldon Award at the Cabaret for the last 2 years. So we'll have that. It'll be really fun. It'll be acts and performances from within the volunteer collective, but also from friends and artists and musicians across the community. I'm working on a date for that right now. And we'll be announcing this year's Bob Sheldon Award, deciding on it probably this month and announcing it next month.
Well,
again, in honor of Bob.
Let us know, and we'll mention it when we, you know, give our...
The last couple of years, last year we were really excited to give it to some friends who work with the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League, which is a really wonderful organization, and they were celebrating their 10th anniversary last year, and so we thought that was a really good... you know, we wanted to honor their anniversary, but also the work they were doing specifically against fracking in North Carolina. And a couple of their organizers, including Therese Vick, who I think is just an amazing person.
We've had her on the
show. She rules. So she accepted the award on behalf of Brettel, her and the director, Lou. And so they were there last year. And the year before that, we gave it to in honor of folks who were organizing in the prisons that year across North Carolina. There were a lot of folks who were incarcerated who had organized strikes and hunger strikes and work strikes and rebellions and pushback on conditions in North Carolina's prisons. And so, the Bob Sheldon Award has been given for many, many years. So it's a really great way that we sort of continue to hold up Bob's memory, but also recognize and really try to amplify things in the community that we see being really, you know, really impactful. So if people also have ideas for things they've seen this year that feel really important to them and want to nominate somebody, they're welcome to contact us at the bookstore as well.
That's great. And I know that you've had an ongoing commitment with the Prison Book Collective.
Mm-hmm.
And because the prisoners a lot of times are the forgotten people.
And, prison work and prisoner support are hugely important at Internationalist Books.
Yeah,
it's some of our bigger work. So we have supportive relationships. We're the sponsor bookstore for a Prison Books Collective here in Chapel Hill and also now one in Durham as well that send free books to prisoners and also political materials and correspondence. And so if people are interested in learning more about that, they can contact us through the bookstore. And we also do a monthly birthday card writing night for political prisoners. The one for January will be on the 12th at the bookstore. And so we get together every month and we write birthday cards to political prisoners who have birthdays in that month. And that's a really great way also to spend time at the store and learn about some of the work that we do, and especially prisoner support and anti-prison work, which is really central, I think, to what a lot of folks who work in the world of the store are interested in.
And what night is that again, the birthday card?
The birthday card letter writing night this month will be Monday, January 12th at 7 p.m.
The 12th.
I love letter writing night. I think it's a really sweet way to make sure that we support movement prisoners, but also it's a great time to spend time with other folks and learn more about the movements that these prisoners come from and also what it means to support people on the inside.
Yeah, so it's once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and is it each month you just pick a date?
And then we promote it.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's all kinds of stuff going on at International Women's Books.
All kinds of good stuff. Absolutely.
And thanks so much for having us on the show, us meaning me, and letting me talk about all the stuff we've got going on across the street.
We're delighted, and that refreshes our memory, because we always try to not just say about International Book, we try to give a little explanation and a little depth promo there.
Well, thank you so much,
Katie,
for doing
thank
that.
Thank you. Katie Yao has been our guest and been a very articulate explicator of the Internationalist Book's history and ongoing.
This is Dick Paddock signing off for Lori Hoyt. We're about to run up against